us any moment is Dr. Joshua Eisen. He's a resident of Harrison, New York. He's accepted the nomination of the Independent Education Community Law Line, a new party. He will appear on the ballot in the race to represent New York's 17th Congressional District. And Dr. Eisen submitted over, mind you, this 5,200 signatures on his petition to qualify for the November ballot, more than double the 2,450 required. And Dr. Eisen collected more than any other independent candidate for any office in New York State. So when he calls in, which should be any moment, we're going to hear Dr. Eisen's vision for Congressional District 17 that is still held and by Nita Lowey. She is not running for re-election, so we're going to so he is, and so I think she's been in office for 32 years, and she says enough is enough. So we're going to find out what his issues are, how he intends to comply with the demeanor and sensibilities of the district. I see he's online. Bear with me a moment as I try to pull him in. Give me a second. Okay. Looks like we're going to get him. There we are. Dr. Eisen, what a pleasure to have you on this morning. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Very well. I'm so pleased that we were able to have this opportunity to talk. So I first have to wish you congratulations for creating an independent party line and at the same time also getting so many signatures, people who supported your effort. That was a huge step for you, wasn't it, to create the party?
Well, I think getting on as an independent is one of the hardest things to do in New York political life. It's obviously easier to get on a primary ballot. You need far fewer signatures. So, yeah, it's a big achievement for me and for my staff. But I think it's also an achievement for all the people out there who aspire to enter political life and are precluded from doing so because of the political establishment and the local committees that really have a lock on the petitioning process. And for most people, it's intimidating and it seems expensive, but I think we figured the riddle out, and we will certainly be back in the political season next year for local races, helping anyone and anybody who is seeking to be on a primary or an independent ballot. And we're gonna show people the ropes and show them how they don't need the local committees. And I think that's a big part of what this is about. Another big victory that we had also is that we not only achieved our own ballot access and position on the ballot, but we uncovered and foiled the plan by the Westchester GOP to sneak their candidate onto the ballot with a second independent line, along with Rob Astorino, the Rebuild New York line, and their candidate only had 1,900 and something signatures, and I think we successfully challenged and had her removed from the ballot. This is Maureen Ricardo Shulman, the candidate on the Republican line for Congress here in the 17th District. And then there was another gentleman, Carlo Bundy, whom we also successfully challenged and removed from the ballot. So we've really figured out a lot of the ins and outs of the petty politics that often derail outsiders like myself.
Well, what's very interesting is that you not only recognized the construct of, of longevity by the parties that exist, and they have all these different capacities, and they have their people in place, and they dismiss and marginalize anybody else that wants to get into the system. And do people recognize that as being an issue? Or are they politically unaware?
Most people are relatively politically unaware. It's really people who wish to run for office or run on a party line. Most people don't think of running as an independent, and when they analyze it, they immediately realize how difficult it is to get anywhere as an independent, especially in New York. But on the party lines, that's something that people often do aspire to, and then they're often just cut out of the system, or committee chairmen won't respond to their calls, or they'll be bullied and intimidated by people on the committee not to primary, not even to try. And that's something that we have now shown, that the committees are just absolutely unnecessary. And let's not forget, if you actually begin to meet a lot of the committee members, they're good, fine people, but I wouldn't say that you're meeting like Einsteins or like these hyper geniuses. These are people who know certain processes, and they've mastered these processes, and often these processes just require a certain level of organization. But I know how to organize, so I'm able to get that kind of number of signatures, and I think I'll be able to do it in the future. And I could have done it to get on the Republican line. I was being a gentleman, and I believed people when they told me that they're going to be able to raise hundreds of thousands of dollars and millions of dollars. But as we see, the local county committees on the GOP side are totally unhelpful. And not only are they unhelpful in the bigger things, like raising money for a nationally profiled race, like such as the one against Mondaire Jones, the Democrat running, but they're unable even to get 2,500 signatures. And that's what they do. That's their job. That's the one thing they're supposed to do. And here we outperformed them and basically destroyed them at their own game. And I hope any political newcomer becomes aware of this and we'll be there to help them get on the ballot. You know, if you want to get on the ballot, I'll put together a team and try to get you on the ballot. Unless you're Adolf Hitler.
But the
Adolf Hitler, right?
Well, I don't think anyone's going to sign up for him. Maybe two or three or four or five. You never can tell. But for you to collect 5,200 signatures is truly amazing. So, can we can expect, for example, that you will be on the ballot for this November, and under the party line, which you have is Education Community Law. And then there'll be a candidate for the Democratic line, but no candidate on the Republican line. So it's just the two of you running.
No, there will be a Republican candidate.
Oh, is there? Okay.
Yeah. We eliminated the Republican candidate from getting a second independent line because the Republican candidate doesn't have the conservative line.
Okay. All right. So how many people are in this race as we move into November?
I think right now, as far as I know, there are five.
Okay. My gosh, a lot of people.
Right.
Wow. That's amazing. How does one, well, more importantly than how does one do it, but the point is you're familiar with the district. You live in the district. Nita Lowey has been exemplary for all the years that she's been there. She's decided not to run for another term. Which opened up the seat, a very powerful seat at that, because she's made it a very powerful position. What do you see are the issues that confront the district that you want to represent?
I want to represent the issues of the normal day-to-day lives of the human beings, the Homo sapiens, just the ordinary people, and that's most of us. Regardless of economic, demographic, and whatnot, most of us have a lot of the same issues in terms of family and going to work and commuting and driving and electricity and the cost of taxes. And my main issues are just to bring a better quality of life to the people in the district. And the best way to do that always is to create jobs for the people in the district, to bring in federal jobs into the district, to bring in federal money into the district. And that's what I'm going to go to Washington, D.C. to do. I'm going to go down there. I'm going to fight like an animal to bring things into the district. I think to begin to get into ideological debates, I'm not willing to win an ideological debate and then lose $1 billion of funding. I'll avoid the ideological debate, and I'll go take the money. And believe me, you know, I hope there are congressmen down there who have restraining orders against me in the way I'm going to pursue these people nonstop, unrelenting. I'll be at their homes. I'll be at their car. I'll be waiting for them outside of the bathroom. I will be unrelenting in terms of the way I will go out there and bring in business. And I know how to do it. I'm a salesman par excellence. And a big part of it is my unrelenting nature, my ability to just make phone call after phone call after phone call. And I made a lot of my money. I'm not a wealthy man because I'm such a brilliant guy. Maybe I am, maybe I'm not. I made a lot of my money because I'm a hardworking, you know, son of a gun, and that's what I'm hoping to bring down into D.C. and bring that back into the district. That doesn't mean I don't have vision and I don't have ideas. I have complex ideas involving testing drones in the district, and we've spoken about this in the past, and I have a lot of visionary ideas. I think a big part of it is to be able to mix vision with an ability to also just be a down and dirty gutter fighter. And when they go to the gutter, I'm pulling them into the sewer. I'm going to fight like an animal. I'm going to get so dirty that the people in this district could be pristine and in white all the time. And that's my goal, to be the fighter of the district. And I don't see that in Mondaire Jones, you know, very coddled and privileged and, you know, good fortunate man who at the age of 18 was able to go to Palo Alto and have a lovely life while I was in New York City driving trucks, just getting through Queens College. So we had very different experiences once we turned 18. And that's really the defining way to view a person. You know, nobody thinks of Joe Namath as the guy from Pennsylvania, from, you know, coal mining country or whatever it is, or steel country. They think of Joe Namath, at the very least, as the guy in Alabama. You know, so he was a star from a young age. And I think Mondaire kind of had that and spent 11, I think, out of his 15 adult years outside of the district. He's not a community person. So he wouldn't even know what to fight for. So he's not really a real guy. But here he is. He's a Democratic nominee. Somehow it happened.
Right. Do people recognize that in a position of a congressperson representing the district that you have the capacity, if you can influence other people to, you know, to be supportive of funding coming to the Congressional District 17? Or do they not recognize that really this is what it's all about, isn't it? The representation is to be able to bring in the money for the community to thrive. And do people understand that? Or
I think some people, look, most people don't know a whole lot. Let's be honest, right? Like many, there are probably a lot of people in the district who don't even know who's running for office. You know, a lot of this is inside baseball for the average
voter.
So my job is to educate people. But that is the job. And look, a successful congressman who's bringing money into the district is constantly out there at the photo ops with the results of that money. Nita, by the time she was in a position as chairwoman of the Appropriations Committee to really bring in the money, right? She had a Democratic Congress last couple of years. She's chairwoman of Appropriations. Yes. She didn't bring in the bacon. I mean, we didn't even get money for the bridge, for the Tappan Zee Bridge.
No.
Right? She didn't bring in money for that. That's crazy. And
no.
I assure you, Nita Lowey, the 60-year-old Nita Lowey, gets that whole bridge paid for and a tunnel. And the train.
Yeah.
And everything. She was too old. And look, I go to the JCC of Harrison. I've seen her there many times. A beautiful woman, a beautiful person, a great representative both of America and Judaism and the values that those two things share. But I think she knew in a way that Elliot Engel didn't know and didn't realize that her time in Congress was over. And she wasn't the person she was. And she loved the people of the district enough to retire. And that's what she did. And look, the last 4, 6, 8 years have not been years when she brought in any money. And the bridge is really the pinnacle of that kind of failure. I mean, to not bring in money for that bridge into a district where that bridge is used more by people outside of the district than anything else. I mean, that is a major artery. Truckers use it all the time. Just get on a CB radio, you know, on Channel 19 near the bridge, and they're on there. So I don't understand how we didn't get funding for that.
I don't either. So, Dr. Eisen, how does one build relationships with other people in, like in the Congress? If you become the congressman, then how do you build relationships with people? Do they align themselves strictly on political dogma? Are they either Republican or Democrat or independent? Is there a way to bridge all these divisions? And what is it that makes people comfortable? I mean, some people may just say, oh, I like the way the guy talks, I like the way he looks, or I like the way he dresses, and some people are approachable, other people are not. But you seem to be really quite approachable anyway. You're a tough guy,
yeah,
but very approachable.
I'm a tough guy, but I'm always looking to make friends. I'm always looking to reconcile with enemies. That's my whole dogma in life. So I don't ever discard relationships. In fact, I work on my relationships with my enemies sometimes more than with my friends. So I'm very, very open to speaking and open to dialogue. And there's nobody in the world that I won't talk to. You know, I'll speak to anybody. I'll literally speak to anybody in the world. I may not do business with anybody in the world, but I'll talk to them and talk to them. And even if today I don't trust them, I have enough faith and hope that maybe tomorrow something about them will change and I'll be able to trust them, and I'll stay in contact in order to just be able to continue to judge those parts about the person in a positive way, to continue to judge those parts of that person in a positive way, and to expand the range of things that I'm able to judge in that person positively, and for them to do the same about me, and for us to help each other do that and achieve that. And I hope being that kind of person in Congress will set me apart. And again, if I win this race, everybody will know who I am and everybody will want to talk to me. And I think it'll be very clear very quickly that I'm just a very different kind of thinker, a deeper kind of thinker, and really just a smarter kind of thinker than the average guy in Congress. And I'm not saying that with any kind of braggadocio or machismo. I'm saying that it's plain fact. And not because I'm so great, but because a lot of the people in Congress aren't. And they need better people. And most people like me just aren't willing to go through what I went through in order to be where I'm at, to figure it all out. And that's really hard to do. It's very hard to do.
Well,
and I'm still figuring it out, to be honest.
You're a family man. You've got children. How do you tie all that in? Because you're connected to your children. You're connected to your life as a family man. How do you tear yourself away when you have to be in Congress down in Washington so much of the time? That's got to be tough on the family as well, isn't it?
I have no clue. How am I supposed to answer that now when I'm not down there? You know,
well, exactly. I know.
If you count up the number of days that the congressmen are really down there, they're not really down there. So, you know, I just don't know what the answer to that is. But it seems like congressmen all have the weekends off, and it seems like they're able to see their families, and it seems like most of them have all the time in the world to raise money. So I'm committed to not raising
amazing.
A penny. Yeah. And I won't. So the amount of time other people are raising money, I'm a smart dude. I know how to make money. So I'll just go out and make money.
Yeah.
And I'll be with my family. And I won't be wasting half my life raising money. And I don't know if I'll run for office in 2 more years. I may just do it for 2 years.
Yeah.
And be done. Mm-hmm. You know. So then I don't have to raise. But if you don't have to raise money, you have you have a lot of time.
Absolutely. People who do get into positions of power in Congress, they usually once they get elected, it's almost like a lifetime job. It's amazing when you look at Nita Lowey; she was there for over 30 years. Engel was there for over 30 years. Does anyone just go there for one term, a 2-year term?
My first day there, I'm looking to groom a replacement.
Okay. Well, that's very unusual thing.
But if I can groom a replacement who's effective, right?
Right.
That means what I'm doing is meaningful. So I'd rather be meaningful than be in Congress.
Right.
I'd rather be both.
Well, you know what?
That's
most people don't have that attitude, and they miss the point that as effective as they are, they need a replacement, and they need to bolster others that have the capacity and proficiency to do the job as well or even better. Quite often we cut people's opportunity in life because we're challenged by them, but I don't think you're the sort of guy that's challenged. You can respect proficiency or efficacy from others without feeling that you're less than you were before. And that's very big.
Less than, it's ideal. Look, let's say there's a guy out there or a woman out there or whatever it is to take over for me in 2 years and do exactly what I'm doing, right?
Uh-huh.
Or even 90% of what I'm doing. They can do. They're 90. They're doing 90% of what I'm doing, but then they're doing 10% of their own shtick. But I get to sit at home and be with my family That's a great deal.
Right. It's absolutely
right? I don't have to, so I lose $180,000 salary, big deal. You know, I could live without it.
Yeah.
Me. I mean, you know, I can make that money working. So I'll work. I'll do sales. I'll go sell with my guys. I'll make money selling. And that's basically it. I don't need to be down there. Somebody else can do what I think needs to be done. But right now, nobody's doing it. So, you know, where there isn't a man, as the Mishnah says, be a man.
I think exactly.
So now, be a person.
So you know you're on the next level. You've attained your ability to be on the ballot. So you're going to be on the ballot. People will decide to vote for you or not vote for you. They may be voting for someone else. But at the end of the day, what then are the challenges that you have now before the election? And what are the challenges should you win the election thereafter? Because pretty much, though, the November means you only have about, two months' time to get your act together because you're going to be in Washington come January. So that's got to be a very exciting prospect.
So my biggest challenge going into the election now is name recognition because nobody knows who the hell I am. And my biggest challenge, should I win, will also be name recognition because I won't have anywhere to hide. So we'll see what it is. But I think I'll be successful in hiding. You know, I've put more cartoons and images of myself out there. And, you know, generally speaking, I don't need to be out there. Most of the companies I own, I'm not, in fact, in all of them, I'm no longer a managing director or CEO. I'm not involved in that kind of way anymore. So I'm happy to not be out there. But right now I have no choice. I have to garner name recognition, and we have to do the digital and the Facebook and the mailings. There's a whole kit and caboodle of things that one must do in order to try to create that name recognition.
So where do you find the expertise to do all of these things? Because that's a quick update, you know, or a quick upgrade, rather, to be able to say, okay, we got ourselves on the party line. We're approved. You're on the ballot. And you have to ratchet all this stuff, like, right away. There isn't that much time before November.
Yeah, that is correct. So we spent the last...
How do you find people like this?
So, look, when you think about political consulting, most politicians and most people running for office hire a general consultant whom they pay between $5,000 and $10,000 a month to, and then that person goes out and hires all these vendors. Most vendors and most companies, like if you're a digital, and the main ones that they'll hire is a company that does the mail, a company that does like digital marketing and Facebook, and then a company that does communications and press. Those are like the big three. And then the fourth one that does fundraising. I'm not doing fundraising because I put $1 million into the campaign. But those are the three, mail and digital / Facebook, and then and the press. And then later on when you get closer to it, you do TV ads. All that stuff is done by companies and consulting firms who – aren't able to put the very best people on a political campaign, right? If I own a business, a political campaign is a short-term deal, right? It's not like, I'm working with somebody who owns two shoe stores and they have aspirations to own 10 shoe stores, and shoes is pretty Amazon-proof because you kind of have to try shoes on, right? So over there, you might say, you know what? This is a growing company. I'm looking at this 29-year-old guy. He's going places. This is a 10-year customer. Yeah. I'm putting my better person on. There's rarely are you going to look at a political campaign and put the best guy on it. And even if you're dealing with a winner or even an elected official, they're not spending a ton of money. And as soon as they win the race, they also have no business for 2 more years or 4 more years or 3 more years or whatever it is. So
that's right.
If you actually look to see who's doing the stuff in politics, it's almost the lowest level people. So we actually had to go out there and figure it out. So I started looking at it more from the perspective of a businessman, and we learned the mail. So we know how to do the mailing now for probably 25% of the cost of what the traditional political mailing companies charge. They almost just charge you a tax because they call it mail, political mail. Yeah, it's a joke. They're just ripping candidates off right and left, mainly because the candidates in the races are spending other people's money. So they're just kind of trusting everybody, right? They got this guy raising the money, that guy spending the money. They don't know what's going on. I'm a different kind of guy. I'm watching it all, just like I'm going to watch the money for the people in the district. I'm going to watch it come in. Right. I'm going to watch it get spent. I'm going to be on top of it because I want to create jobs for people. You know, that's my main goal. So here, too, you know, I'd rather create good, sustainable jobs for my staff and have them learn how to do these things. So we figured out the mail. We figured out digital, Facebook. And for that, for those things, we have hired people, and I have some staff, but we've taken in-house pretty much every single part of the campaign, including the press. And if you look out there, we're getting as much press as any first-time candidate, and it's all hard work. It's about making phone calls and reaching out and staying in touch and really just working. There's no substitute for hard work, because as smart as you are, there could be another guy as smart as you, but they're working their ass off.
Exactly. Since you're running for office, is part of your message going to be exactly what you just explained, and that is you're looking to bring home the bacon, excuse the pun, so you're going to be bringing in the money, you're going to be able to try to also coalesce interest in what you're doing and to fund the district that you'll be representing. Can you build a conglomeration of people of like mind so that you support them in their effort, they support you? And is that what people need to know on how to judge a candidate, whether they've been there for a long time or whether they're new? Do we forget that?
People forget that, and that's going to be my challenge is, first of all, to get name recognition, and then for people to associate my name with a person who's going to champion the things that are important to them and do so in a way that translates into federal dollars. And that's my challenge, is to look at every single community situation and to see how am I going to be able to get money out of these new bills and all this legislation that's being written. How can I get money for my district? So I'm going to look at every single appropriation. I'm going to see every single thing that's out there, and I'm going to be on the phone with the press and letting them know, look at all these shenanigans going on over here. I'm going to be on top of every little thing that might relate to my district and that might relate to my community. So if there's money out there for, you know, wetlands analysis or environmental stuff, I'm going to make sure that we get some of that money, create those 30 jobs, those 40 jobs, right? I want those jobs in our district, and we got to fight for them. And if every single week I create another 50 jobs in our district in a year, that's a lot of jobs. That's 2,500 jobs. That's
absolutely
just I created. Okay, so this is the way I'm thinking about it. And there's also creating value for properties by doing that, increasing taxes for the local municipalities and local towns by improving the value through those federal dollars that, if appropriated correctly, will add value to the properties. So I think this is an opportunity to do a lot of things. And to each person and each community, you have to speak in their language. And the bottom line is to show them, this is how I think I can help you guys based on what you're telling me. But step one is to hear all these people out. And that's going to be a real challenge, you know, especially with COVID.
Absolutely.
You know, I got to get out there and, you know, listen to the unions, listen to the synagogues. But I'm going to bring in the bacon, and I'm going to bring in the glatt kosher food, the halal. I'll bring in the vegan. I'll bring in I'll bring in the trace. I'll bring it all. You know, whatever people want, I'll bring it in. I got to figure out what all that is, and that's a challenge.
Yeah, that's hard. Well, you've got to be a cook in politics, and you've got to be a cook when you greet so many different disparate people and different cultures and stuff. I guess when you put it all together, I guess that is your biggest challenge, as you point out, name recognition, so that people will come out to vote for you. And everyone that's running for political office, particularly in Congressional District 17, are new to the game, so to speak. Because they've never held elected office, and does that actually bring everybody to the same level of accomplishment or lack thereof? And so that's the rest of your life, actually, that's going to be very, very impressive on how we can judge people, your education, your accomplishment in business, and so on and so forth.
Right. It's a unique moment when you don't have to worry about dealing with an incumbent, which is, I think, why
right.
you have five people running and why there suddenly was so much interest in the seat, especially on the Democratic side. So,
yeah.
So I think you're correct. This is an opportunity. And look, if people vote strictly based on an individual's abilities and their understanding of the law, there's no question about it. I'm the guy, right? If like an independent
yeah.
panel of experts, I don't care where they come from and what their political leanings are, you can't possibly pick a 33-year-old guy who spent 11 out of his 15 adult years outside of a district, and you can't possibly pick a progressive who's never really felt the stress of like real poverty himself.
Mm.
Right? And I'm not saying that I have, but certainly he hasn't, right? You don't get to Stanford if you're in real poverty. Real people in real,
yeah.
real poverty don't find their way to Stanford and Harvard. It just not doesn't happen.
No,
so
they don't.
By virtue of him
no.
getting there, he's not like, you know, in some trailer park in Appalachia where it's not even happening. You know, they never get out of it. So I think that's where
exactly.
where and again, I'm not saying they never get out of it, but the statistics are different than if you're in a place like Rockland or even in New York City where the exposure and the amount of people eager to help you in these urban or suburban areas is enormous. So he benefited from all that. And then you have Maureen, a Republican, who's just a symbol of the ineptness of the Westchester GOP. This is a GOP committee that has zero people on the county legislature. The minority seat, the head of the minority, the one person in the minority there is a conservative party member. So the whole Westchester GOP is a big joke. It might even be corrupt. I'm not really sure, but certainly the chairman of the GOP makes a lot of money on Democratic candidates who need printing. He's in the mail printing business for politicians. So
I see.
There's a real
wow.
problem with them. And yeah, and look, they weren't able to even get their candidate 2,500 signatures. And I was able to double that number. So clearly they're pathetic. And then the Rockland GOP has its own problems. And when there's so many whispers and accusations of anti-Semitism, clearly the chairman at the top is a problem and he needs to just step down. Aside from him being personally bankrupt and having other personal financial issues that also make him just vulnerable to being compromised as somebody in that position, you're dealing here with two committees that just aren't really functioning in an optimum way, and mainly it's because of the two people at the top. So I think their candidate reflects that. And what sort of candidate in this kind of race has raised barely $20,000. I don't even think she's gotten there. And that's totally not
really?
Her fault. She's a fine woman, and she's a former firefighter, first woman in the fire, you know, first woman, she was a member of the class to have women for the first time in the FDNY, first responder at 9/11, you know, a lot of real deep and meaningful personal experience, obviously, in the fire
yeah.
department. You can imagine what firefighters see. And then, of course, in her community and personal family stuff. So she's an older woman with, you know, in her 50s, 60s, whatever it is, but a woman who's had a lot of experience. And I think if the parties were strong or smart, she would have been a real viable candidate, especially against a radically left-wing person. And if she were viable, I wouldn't have been running. I would have been trying to help her. But I think here we are where she's just a non-factor in the race, sadly. So...
Amazing.
And that's something that we got to deal with. So she's the other person. And then the conservative candidate barely even wants to be in the race anymore. She was the Rockland County Republican Committee's candidate, and she lost in the primary to Maureen McArdle Schulman. So she got onto the conservative line. And so the conservatives and Republicans are split. You know, Mondaire Jones has both the Dem and the Democratic and the Working Family Party's line, and then there's another guy on the SAM line, the former Reform Party. So
mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
His name's
going
right
on
now.
There.
Yeah,
well,
so it's a pretty compelling.
We actually come to the end of our time, but before you go, if you have a moment, how do people learn more about your particular candidacy? Is there a website they can go to, or how do they reach out to you if they want to support you?
I think the best way is to go to EisenForCongress.com, EisenForCongress.com spelled out, and then we also have a Facebook page and a Twitter page, but all that is easily found on our website, and hopefully people who are listening who live in the district will be seeing our ads, and we're giving out our really cool education community law t-shirts, very cool Dr. Dre-esque kind of logo. Yeah, so hopefully we'll get those out there. So if anybody wants a free t-shirt, feel free to contact the campaign, and we'll be more than happy to get that t-shirt to you. It's at no cost, so it's good times.
That's phenomenal. Well, I hope this has been a comfortable conversation and that you'll consider coming back. It's certainly very, very compelling, and your campaign is compelling. So I think you could be the breath of fresh air that Congress has been looking for a very long time. We've been talking about it as a nation, but we haven't seen it. So maybe you're the man. You're going to be the deliverer in politics.
Let's see what the nation is ready for.
Exactly. Well, thank you again, Dr. Eisen. What a pleasure. All the best
to
you.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you, sir. Zero. Well, there we have it, folks. Dr. Joshua Eisen. He is designated now on the independent party line, which is called Education Community Law, and. So he's vying for your vote in Congressional District 17.